everyone. I'm Jo. This is Looking Outside. And today we are exploring the topic of climate action from a very different perspective. Our environmental crisis, of course, as we're all feeling, are pretty serious topics, and talking about them can feel a little heavy. But today we're doing that with a more positive outlook with a very inspiring guest, founder of Earth Plus, Elena Doms. Huge welcome to the show, Elena.
Thank you so much, Jo. I'm really excited to be here, and thank you, everyone.
Well, let's start with a little intro into who you are.
So I was born and raised in the Arctic, right next to the Polar Circle. You can call me a northern girl, an Arctic girl, if you wish. I spent 18 years there, and I actually haven't realized how special my childhood was until I started sharing it with other people. And that probably gave a start to who I am today. And that's one of the two reasons why I'm really, really passionate about sustainability. Because the more I learn about it, and thanks to my degree, the more I realize how Arctic is critical for all of us around the world, how it's at the forefront of climate change, and everything that happens there translates into extreme weather events and climate change all over the world, impacting billions of people. I've been living in Belgium for the last 15 years as well. So that's my second home. I moved here to work for a student organization called ISEC. I was here a country manager of ISEC in Belgium, leading 500 volunteers focusing on the social part of sustainability and impact. And then I spent 11 years at MasterCard, working with financial institutions, banks and fintechs all across Europe, and then finance strategy, and in the last years, my favorite piece on merging sustainable and digital transformations and how technology can scale sustainable impact. But I still wanted more because, remember, I'm from the Arctic and I really could see firsthand the change that is happening there and my childhood home literally melting away. And in the meantime, I got two little kids and I was really worried and passionate about them having a better future. The same for all the kids in the world. And in the end, I left MasterCard, even though it was a fantastic company to work for. And together with really inspiring people here in Belgium, we started a group of companies, including Earth Plus. And now we are creating the next ocean cleanup, but for soils and CO2.
Yeah, so you touched on it a little bit. So Earth Plus has a mission and has obviously the tools and the aids and the solutions to help to clean up the soil. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you guys do at Earth Plus?
I will start with a story of how everything started, if you don't mind.
Of course.
That a few years ago, there was a big scandal in Belgium around forever chemicals or PFAS. If you haven't heard of them, they are everything that make things non-stick and water-resistant. So they can be in our computers, in our phones, in our winter jackets, in pizza boxes, everywhere around us, even in paper straws. And of course, there are producers of forever chemicals because they have really useful properties and they can be in our everyday items. The problem is they do not decompose. So they need temperatures above 1,400 degrees Celsius. And that's why scientists fear that they will stay there for millennia. There was this big scandal in Belgium, and the government actually ordered a study to measure contamination of forever chemicals in people's blood living around the production facility. What they discovered is that most of the people had higher limits. And in fact, if you look at Europe, it's really close to 100% of people that have forever chemicals in their blood. They are maybe safe to be used in consumer products, but the production process creates this pollution that spreads really far, and it has been found even in the Arctic ice and in the blood of polar bears. What it means is that it's a health issue and health concern as well, because they accumulate in people's bodies and cause different diseases. A study carried out by ChemSec, an NGO in Sweden, has found out that global societal costs of forever chemicals are $17.5 trillion per year. And that includes healthcare and cleanups. Doesn't even include impact on nature and construction, for example. So since it was a big problem, the Belgian government ordered the producer of the chemicals, the large international chemical company, to look for solutions. But solutions are really scarce. They do not decompose. So currently, majority of the solutions when it comes to soils is to take this ground and to put it somewhere else. Now, you can do that with the hotspots, but you can't do that with all the areas around. For example, if you look at research in Europe, there was last year an independent investigation, which is published in Le Monde by Forever Pollution Project. It was actually inspired by the investigation in the US to map out the contaminated spots. And if you zoom into that map, it's just crazy. You will see that one third of Europe is just red and contaminated. So we can't literally excavate a third of our continent. Then there are a lot of mildly contaminated areas that we need to deal with. And when I was back at MasterCard, I met an entrepreneur, Frederik Verstraete. He's CEO of Sea Biotech now, a company we worked together with him. And he ran the first ever pilot together with the University of Hasselt to try to clean forever chemicals from soils with industrial hemp. Why hemp? Because he was working on decarbonizing construction for many years, and hemp grows really fast, up to 4 meters in just 3.5 months. It sequesters a lot of CO2, 9 to 15 tons per hectare per crop, so in just these 4 months, which is 2 to 4 times more than a young forest in a year. And it has endless applications. In fact, previously, we owe our wealth, at least here in Europe, to hemp, because the ship sails were made out of hemp. Construction was made out of hemp. Fabrics were out of hemp. But there was another reason. It was known to remediate and clean soils. It was even used to clean Fukushima and Chernobyl. So they ran this pilot, and the results were really promising. They discovered that hemp acted like a big pump and transferred pollution from the roots of the plant, from the soil through the roots into the leaves. The stems and the pollen remained completely clean, so the bees were safe. And the stems, which is 75% of biomass, could be used to create these circular construction materials, which were bio-based, meaning that finally we could have a business model to clean and restore soils and to turn construction from a very large carbon emitter into a carbon sink. And I was so inspired by that project that I thought, this is what I want to do. I remembered Bojan Slat, the ocean cleanup, and I thought, we need to do this for soils. That's how we started Earth Plus in collaboration with Sea Biotech, with a goal to create the largest soil and CO2 cleanup, meaning that we are focusing on polluted grounds, PFAS, but also other types of pollution and everything that we can manage with nature-based solutions, including plants and fungi. Mildly contaminated areas, which are way too expensive and not feasible to be clean otherwise. We think nature is the smartest out there. It has all the instruments. And then we focus also on degraded lands, which we can restore with the help of plants, and agricultural lands where we can restore that land as an intermittent crop and actually bring up the yields of the main crops. And we focus on both, right? The soils, cleaning and restoring soils, and sequestering a lot of CO2 at the same time while capturing the CO2 in construction, in the sinks. So that's what we do on a daily basis. Really fascinating, really exciting. Not maybe a very known issue because we can't see soil contamination. It's invisible. However, as a mother of 2 children, I really care about the food, how it's being grown and what my kids eat. And knowing what goes into our soils and what goes into our plants, I really see the urgency of how we need to clean our soils, because that directly correlates with our health, but also restore our soils, because already globally, 52% of agricultural soils are to some level degraded. And the number will only go up with the growing population and with the climate crisis. So we really need to do something. Our life depends on it.
Yeah, I mean, well put. That's really well put. So there's a sense of urgency there for sure. And I know I promised at the start of the show this would be a more positive conversation around climate, but like to get into the positive stuff, you have to face reality. So that's where we're going to spend a little bit more time. So just on Forever Chemicals specifically, and I think that the initiatives that you have at Earth Plus, the mission that you have is definitely a worthy one. When I was doing a little bit of research for this episode, It was very scary. So forever chemicals show up in 99% of Americans. For anyone listening from America, our food is contaminated with forever chemicals. Our water is contaminated with forever chemicals. But as you said, people can't see it. And I think a lot of people don't talk about that. So I do see this shift towards, alongside reducing the negative impact that we currently have on the planet based on our activities, there's a concurrent initiative to regenerate the ecosystem and kind of clean it up, which is great. But that seems like a lower priority at the moment, should be a higher priority. But because people can't see it, they look outside their window, they can see life moving on and things are, you know, maybe a little warmer, but things feel relatively the same. So what do you find is the most effective thing to get people to understand how much of a significant issue this is in a way that's it motivates them to action?
This is a really good question. A good question in the sense that if you really know all the details, it might be hard to go on and stay positive. Because like me, you'll start to analyze which food you buy in the shop, what's the likelihood of it containing forever chemicals. It goes the same for buying clothes. It goes the same for using any type, even toilet paper, you know. It really gets complicated. So I would say we cannot really scare people with absolute details because that would be really preventing the action. The first thing is indeed awareness, and that's why we are building our platform, our technology platform with partners like Microsoft, who are supporting us because we want to raise awareness on what's happening with soils, both pollution and degradation. Use visualization instruments to showcase where you can zoom in into the area where you live in and see if there is any data and statistics on that. This part is important. Then what actually the pollution does to us, why it's important short term, right? Maybe we can see we need to be climate neutral by 2050. And maybe that would be for somebody else, but the pollution and the food that we eat, that is really right now. This is what goes onto our plates. So that's why it's so important to act on it. However, I always believe that education should come with a positive action. We cannot be out there just sitting and pointing fingers and saying, oh, there are bad guys that have polluted the world and that's it. It always has to be, for me, as a story of radical collaboration and positive action together. Okay, fine, we have a problem. Maybe you haven't known about that problem. Here is how what you can do in your life to maybe minimize the exposure as much as you can, even though it's really difficult. And then you need positive action on two fronts. The first front would be to see how that can be substituted. For example, I mentioned the statistics from ChemSec. They calculated that only 8% of usage of PFAS cannot be substituted. For the rest, there are alternatives, and they really work with companies, really huge global companies, to substitute PFAS with other better chemicals in their products. They also work on lobbying and government regulations to make sure that these things are taken more seriously. We need R&D and innovation on that front. We need to close the tap. And then the second part of the positive action has to be on the cleanups. And here, I do think that nature is so powerful. I mean, we just have to learn how nature does things. We just have to understand we are part of nature. Plants have been doing this for years. Fungi has been doing certain things for years. We can really capitalize on what nature is doing and just let it be, you know, just supercharge it and make sure that we create a positive story of action. And no, it will not be in 1 year. If we have been producing forever chemicals for over 60 years, we can't get rid of the pollution in 1 year. That's why scientists fear it will stay for millennia. But if we can clean mildly contaminated areas in 10 or 20 years, and we can move from standstill into a solution where in short term we can really see positive action while sequestering CO2 at the same time and decarbonizing construction, I think that's an amazing story to tell and just a must do.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people are very motivated to jump on that train as well and take action, whether you're in an organization trying to create a strategy or you're an individual, like you said, assessing your own choices and just becoming more educated and more aware about these topics. I think that the three things that you touched on, just to reiterate them, are just like really great foundational strategies for thinking about how you communicate complex and scary climate topics. So awareness, radical collaboration. I love that. And positive action in part from learning from nature. In the learning from nature piece, what I'm curious about then is this getting harder? Because obviously in 2023, we ended the year, the warmest year ever recorded since we've started recording. And we can see these extreme weather events. We can see the financial impact of them. So it becomes harder to invest in these things. But we also see probably an acceleration of some of the soil degradation and chemical proliferation issues. So is it getting harder for us to do what you do?
I would say the opposite, actually. I think it's a little bit sad to see, but I think we are wired to work like this. We focus on things at hand, right? Something strikes and we focus on dealing with the consequences instead of really working together and preventing those consequences from happening. The more climate crisis escalates, the more we see the urgency of action, the more we see people really looking for solutions, really being open for radical collaboration, a term I kindly borrowed from Sophia Kenny, by the way. I think it's becoming easier. If you would have been talking about it, and I know I've been told some people were protesting PFAS 50 years ago, but nothing moved. If we see the urgency of action, I truly believe that as humanity, we can come together and we can really act on it. So on one hand, yes, it's really bad that things are escalating. On the other hand, I think it really kicks us in the butt in a way to start moving and start doing something about it.
Yeah, that's amazing. And so I guess on that line of thought around radical collaboration, and you speak a lot as part of what you do. So if anyone's interested in having Elena on as a speaker, I highly recommend it. If you watch some of the presentations, they're incredibly motivating. And I think you say positive goosebumps from the audience, which is a really accurate way of describing it. So very motivating. And I can imagine as part of that, you get a little bit of Q&A as well. So I'm wondering, what's a really insightful or provocative question that you've received from audiences, or to, I guess, business leaders who you've presented to, or like who has been maybe a surprising ally for you?
One of the provocative ones is that we have a truly holistic solution, right? We work with partners and several companies, starting from remediating soil, then innovating and producing bio-based construction materials and moving to the technology platform piece, which is Earth Plus, to measure everything near real time, to financial instruments that we can introduce to really move from polluted lands into valuable lands. It's a very holistic piece. It requires a lot of collaboration, a lot of different partners to come together. And what I've heard is simple scales, complex has more chances to fail. But I think that's a little bit of a faulty approach in our circumstances nowadays, because we have been scaling simple things for years and we've arrived at the point of climate crisis. Right now, we do need simple solutions, but we also need radical collaboration. That's why here you have a merge between agriculture, industry, and construction in order to solve an issue, because put one actor on it together and they can't solve it, but put them all together and it all of a sudden becomes a really great story of positive impact. So for me, we have to start thinking holistically. We have to start implementing solutions that are not just tackling one piece, but looking at everything that is possible there to look. Of course, nature is complex. Of course, there is a lot of different dependencies, but we have so much scientific knowledge, so many scientists that have been working on solutions for years. We try to think holistically. And for example, our solution integrates CO2 reduction, less usage of water, decarbonization of the hard-to-abate sectors, soil restoration. So biodiversity looks into different aspects. And I think that's what makes it beautiful. Yes, it's harder to implement, because we are dependent on so many different players. But at this point in time, isn't this a beautiful thing? Isn't it a beautiful thing that in sustainability, we're not thinking about competition and how to outperform each other, but we are thinking about how we can work with each other for a better good. And in the end, we have one home. All of us, we have one home, which is our planet. So this is what we need to prioritize, not short-term thinking, not short-term profit, but really how we can work together to make our planet a better place.
Yeah.
So yes, that was a controversial question, but I truly think that we have to start thinking holistically. And actually, this has been the best part of the puzzle. I've mentioned my co-founder, Frederik Verstraeten, CEO of C-Biotech. He has these amazing capabilities of putting different industries together and thinking holistically. And I think that's the beauty of innovation.
I don't think we often think about that in the realm of sustainability, there is less competition as it should be. I mean, maybe competition, sometimes I think people think drives faster innovation, but what we're finding is a wealth of innovation in this space, and then an open sourcing or a free distribution of those ideas and systems. I was giving an example to my business the other day from the beauty industry, where we see a lot of these for example, biodegradable materials. If a company creates a better solution, they're like, here you go, everybody, please use this. Or even in the snacking space, we see that quite a lot. So I think that's amazing. And I love that when you talk, you do have that business hat on as well from your past and your time at MasterCard. So you're able to understand some of the challenges that maybe big or small corporations face in actually driving action against their environmental strategies. Do you find that when you're working with company leaders, that is an asset for you, that you've walked in their shoes and you understand the challenges that they face?
Definitely. First of all, entrepreneurship is a completely different world, really fast paced. You have smaller teams, you have innovative ideas, you reiterate, you come back, you innovate all the time, and you're really fast. In the corporate world, you need to get a lot of stakeholders on board. There are certain things that are being done in a certain way, and you can't just tomorrow try and decide to do something new. You really need to be very well connected, have executive sponsors, really advocate for a really long time before something moves. Plus, big corporates are dependent on shareholder profits, right? So they really need to show that sustainability is also a better choice for business. I mean, of course it is a better choice for business because sustainability in essence is being able what you want to do forever. So we can't be non-sustainable. We have to be regenerative, otherwise it's a business risk. However, still in big corporates, you need to show this return on investment. You need to show why it's a better solution. So it definitely helps to have this background when talking to them and understanding where they're coming from. However, I've also really rediscovered my respect for entrepreneurs and startups, because when I was working at the corporate, I haven't realized how hard that was. I mean, I'm absolutely happy where I'm now. I wouldn't change it for the world. For me, it's the most impactful thing I could do, and I really love it. However, it's also the toughest job that I ever had to do, because you have to do everything. You don't just focus on a specific function, you do everything. You do business development, speaking at events, technology, every little thing, especially while the teams are small. And I really have discovered a big, big respect for entrepreneurs, and especially entrepreneurs in the sustainability space, because you're not just putting together a business model, you're putting together a business model that has to turn something bad into a candy that everybody wants. So yeah, that's another interesting perspective that I've discovered in the last few months. Now the question is how to put these two together. But I really see a big desire from the corporate world to change and to collaborate with startups. So we are collaborating with several big companies, including Microsoft, and we are part of their global accelerator for entrepreneurship for positive impact among other 40 startups around the world. And they have been amazing. You can really see that corporates like Microsoft are heavily interested in impact, in real action on the ground, and really want to invest and support you as much as you can to hyperscale globally. So in that sense, I think the tide is really changing, and I'm really, really grateful that we have corporate partners like that.
Yeah, and it's so nice to hear that as well, because I think a lot of the times, going back to the point that you made earlier, we like to find the bad guy and point a finger and say, well, this industry or this company or this category is the culprit, and why can't they just switch things off, or and why can't they just stop their bad behavior and that will fix everything. But going back to your other point, everything is interconnected. All of these systems rely on each other. This is the way that our world is structured. And so I love that you say, you know, don't point the finger at the bad guys. Help companies and big organizations and industries, instead of, yeah, don't demonize them, try to help them. So I guess in the sustainability space though, and particularly startups and companies that are really doing very advanced things with a very clear mission around sustainable action, like Earth Plus, I think a lot of the times it comes across, and I don't know if this is accurate, but it comes across like they're more pure organizations, like they're structured around their mission. And generally, you know, you work your butt off, and you're very dedicated. You're very personally passionate about the environment, and your whole company is dedicated towards positive action. And so they seem like they're more pure. Does it then become more challenging for you when you are talking to the air quote bad guys? Like, are you worried about, or do you get any pushback, I should say, from the more pure startups around your collaborations in those spaces?
The thing is that it's all people working in any company, right? And startups and big corporates. And I think we as people, we try to see and understand the urgency of action. So if we look at those corporates, yes, there are certain people in the corporates that you need to appeal to their heads more with the business case or the relevance or how it's better for them. And then you need to use this angle. But there are also really a lot of passionate people that perceive it from the heart. And they're like, this is really amazing. We have to do it. And they try to help you as much as they can. It's in the end, it's all about connections. There are companies, but it's not like a corporate is a certain one face, right? It's a very complex organism with a lot of people inside and a lot of wonderful people that truly want to make a difference fast. So in that sense, I don't see very much difference. You can make a change from a point of a startup trying to implement a new solution, but you can also make a change being inside the corporate, having access to all these resources. Yes, maybe it's a little bit slower, but there is more money in the corporate world, more partnerships, more leverage, and different people can make impact through different levels.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that what you do so well is you make the topic very human. So you're talking about one human engaging with another human being to drive action where there's already synergy and passion between them about this topic. And you do that really well in the public space as well. So I'd love to talk to you about this tremendous growth that you've had on your public platforms. Obviously, I mentioned speaking before, but you also have a huge following on LinkedIn now. You do these 1-minute videos every day around sustainability issues. And you do that in a very human way. What I mean by human is, you know, it's a little bit vulnerable. I don't know if that's how you feel as well, but it's just kind of transparent, very personable, and a little bit personal. So that's definitely resonating with the audience that you have that's growing exceptionally. Have you found that to be a really helpful aid in getting the message out around sustainability and the initiatives that you have? Or is that something that's kind of just like a personal driver for you that you've tried to create?
First of all, thank you so much for the compliment. I'm really happy that it resonates. This is something that I've been working on for years. I was trying to improve my communication and I've tried different things. When I was back at MasterCard, I've tried the scientific angle or like, yeah, we need to do this, we need to do that because it's really important and the science is behind it. And I realized that my message is not getting across. However, when I became more personal, understanding what people are passionate about, locations they want to retire, and I could, you know, say, look, this is what's happening to the client, to the climate, maybe it's not the best way to go there. When I started to really engage in a storytelling and really sharing things that are super interesting in the climate space, super interesting innovations, super interesting natural aspects. Like, for example, I love talking about Greenland or the Arctic in general and all the fascinating things that are happening there. I've realized that people are more prone to understand things when it's simple storytelling, when it's capturing, when it's interesting. And ever since, I've been trying to learn how to better communicate. It's a tough challenge being in the climate space because there is a lot of climate anxiety and sometimes we face really hard things. And the more you know, the really harder it becomes to sleep on one side if you really focus on that. But on the other hand, it's really important because otherwise we can't get people on board. We really need positive hope and story of action. Everybody wants action. I mean, ever since we started Earth Plus and to see how Sea Biotech is developing as well, everyone wants positive story of action. So that has been tremendous. But it's a constant learning of how to communicate better, how to bring the message across. And I think simple messages, what really works, connecting it to personal experiences, what really works, and storytelling. So even when I go on stage, and you mentioned indeed that people say that I cause goosebumps, I really just tell my personal story. I could go out there and say, look, and give all the facts about the Arctic and the climate globally and say we are at 1 point, this degree warming, right? And these are the trillions that it will cost. And this is the billions of lives that it will impact. Or I could just share my story of how it was as a kid and how it is now, really personal one. And that would touch hearts better than me just diving into science and statistics. So it is a work in progress. LinkedIn has been an amazing platform for me to learn to try to do that, but also an amazing platform to connect with a lot of people. That's how my journey started. They're on LinkedIn and I've met so many inspiring people and learned so many different things that they have been doing, that actually that brought me up, that gave me that spin of a positive story of action and hope, because I didn't feel alone anymore. I saw there are so many amazing people working on it. That's also how I met Frederick, and how I got to know about this story and how everything started. So it definitely helps to get the message across, to practice communication, but also to get partners on board. It's been an amazing journey and something that I still learn and appreciate every single day. I'm grateful to everyone who is connected with me on LinkedIn and to all the learnings that I get from there. That feeling of being not alone, it's really priceless.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, that's how we connected as well. That's how I found you on LinkedIn. So thank you, LinkedIn.
Yes.
One thing that I did want to ask you, which is sort of connected into that, where obviously you leverage storytelling and making the messages that you want to land more personal and connect with people is obviously very effective. So I'm keen to hear whether you think this is true or not. And if it's not, then that's even better. But I think it might be true. Because you're young and you're very youthful and you're a female, do you find that you in the climate space do have to work a little bit harder to be taken seriously? Or do you find that young people do have a stronger voice now in the climate space?
Oh, I'm not as young as some really inspiring climate activists that I've met who are still in universities. I'm 35. In general, even if we don't look at the climate space, I did notice it was harder to be taken seriously because I always looked younger than I was. And when I started at MasterCard, a lot of people thought I was a daughter of a colleague. When you go and you sign business deals, that's probably not the easiest way to go around.
Right.
When you come in a meeting and you still have to prove yourself. So I'd say maybe that's two things put together. I look younger. I'm also not really tall. I'm little, basically. And yeah, I'm a woman. I never perceived, you know, like women not having to work harder or something like this. I never really perceived it as a barrier, but rather looking young and being small. And that was really harder. However, I've discovered when I started using LinkedIn and growing network on LinkedIn that when people know me from there, when they know what I do, what content I put out, especially in videos, you can really connect to people, right? They can not just know the pictures that you post, but they get you better personally. They really perceive me differently. So for any women that are struggling maybe in the climate tech space or any other space to work harder to make a difference, I would say online platforms, especially LinkedIn, is a wonderful tool to propel you because you meet a lot of people, you can have a lot of conversations online before you meet physically and you don't have to stare, you know. And then, yeah, people get to know you much better and they really perceive you differently because they already know your values, they already know what you're doing and they already know what kind of questions they can ask you. So that would be my really big recommendation to really put yourself out there, to post content, to share content of other people, and to actively reach out. What I found is that everyone is incredibly open to connect in the online world and through networks like this. At the beginning, I was just sending requests to people in sustainability saying, look, we are both passionate about it. I'd love to connect. And so many people responded back and said, let's have a conversation. Let's have a chat. And you wouldn't even think that they would be so open, but they really, really are. So I strongly encourage to use LinkedIn and to showcase yourself there and what you're really passionate about.
Yeah, definitely. And videos are also a great way. Like you said, it's not a copy and paste statistic. You can actually see that you are knowledgeable about the topic. You mentioned that you had done the degree. You can share the story of your childhood and like why is this important to you from where it started. And so that's what I would love to have a chat about now, which is your childhood. Speaking of youth and taking us back all the way. So you were born in the Arctic,
next to the Polar Circle.
Okay.
For those of you who are listening, if you have seen the James Bond GoldenEye movie, at the beginning of the movie, there is this chemical weapons facility in the high mountains full of snow. And there is this a bit funny moment where he defeats everyone, runs out. Of course, he defeats everyone. I mean, that's not even a question. But then he tries to escape in a little plane and that plane falls off a cliff.
So here is where the fun part, not only he defeats everyone, he also jumps off the cliff after the plane, flies without any protection, gets into that plane and steers it away. So they say it's my home city, Arkhangelsk. It's not. This was filmed in Switzerland, but I always find it funny that, that they think it is.
Right.
My home city is not that scary. 300,000 people live there.
Oh, wow.
And it's very flat. There are some hills, but no mountains like that, and definitely no chemical weapons facilities. And yeah, it's right next to the polar circle.
Yeah, and it's very cold because I know that you do talk about that a little bit, but you did farm when you were a kid. So it's not so cold that you don't have an agriculture system in the area where you can farm food.
Yes, it's considered a zone of risky agriculture.
Right.
You still can grow food. My parents bought this small piece of land and built a small house there when I was really tiny. And we've been growing food there. So they taught me how to do it. We can grow potatoes, carrots, radishes. You can grow berries, right. Sunflowers. The growing season is really short. So normally you can plant in the ground in June and you harvest in August. So some things you need to start growing maybe on the windows as of February. And depending on the site, whether you have enough sun, not enough sun, which type of soil you have, it can be a little bit easier or a little bit harder, but definitely it's, you never know what you're going to get. One year it can be a lot of courgettes. Another year it can be a lot of berries. It's harder to predict. You need to protect plants from diseases, but you can definitely grow food there. Arctic is not just ice. It's also home to, for example, boreal forests that are one of the largest carbon sinks on land. So yeah, you can grow food there. And I'm really grateful that I had that experience.
Yeah, firsthand. And now you live in Belgium. So have you taken your kids to your homeland and gone back since you left?
My son, yeah, we have traveled with our son there. So he has seen it when he was little. But yeah, definitely we'll need to take them home and showcase them the Arctic.
Yeah, definitely. Well, especially as you say, if it's a zone of risk, then it's really impactful also to see over time as he grows up and he, you know, hopefully goes and visits how the land is changing and see the effects of climate change firsthand.
Yes, both my son and my daughter, they all both love snow. So I think if I take them in winter, they really love it.
Yeah.
Whenever we get a little bit of snow in Belgium, they really go crazy. They try to eat it. They make snowmen. They slide. I think they would really love it over there.
Yeah, well, you need to come to Chicago then because we get a lot of snow here. And I love it as well. My dog loves it. I get, when the first snow falls, I get very excited. I turn into a little kid. Like I tape it. And the first little snowfalls are coming. I'm like, oh my God, it's here. And then it stays for like 6 months.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's very long winters. Yeah. So, but it's beautiful. And it's nice to see this, the seasons as well. And I know that that's one thing that's kind of being very impacted by climate change and the environmental situation that we have here. It's becoming a little less predictable, but a lot of hope on the horizon for what action we can take. A lot of that you're driving, Elena. So thank you for sharing your story and your passion for the environment and some of the hard statistics and facts that we're up against. I have one last question for you before I let you go. And obviously in the theme of the podcast and gaining more perspective like we have from you coming on the show, what is your go-to for when you're trying to push yourself to look outside and see things from a different light?
I follow a lot of really interesting people, including LinkedIn as well. And I try to learn from them as much as I can because we can't know everything. It's a very dynamic space that keeps developing. And one of the people here in Belgium, I was at the conference, Lucas De Man, he mentioned, we cannot be arrogant enough to say that we know how to fix it. We can be humble enough to work together to try to fix it. I think that's what we need to realize. Things are changing constantly. It's not a given, and we are here to innovate and try everything that we can, as much as we can, because no action is not an option. So I try to learn from as many people as I can in the climate change and sustainability space. And then I also really like to read different books, maybe in different but connected areas like communication, or I really love the book of The Art and Science of Creating Good Luck by Dr. Christian Busch. So I try to read, you know, different books on habits and other things, and then connect them into the climate space. And that also really gives me a different perspective on, for example, how we can communicate differently, what we can do differently, how we can scale differently. So these are my go-tos.
Yeah, I love that. I'm sure that you find lots of really interesting, kind of contrasting but complementary connecting points to make storytelling and climate even more impactful. That's awesome. Great. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story again. And thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for the invitation, Joan. It was really cool to talk to you today.
Yeah, great to talk to you too.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate, review, or share the show. And I will see you next time. Until then, keep looking outside.